Hey there, and thanks for joining us for this episode of 13. This is part 5 of a 5-part series. If you haven't listened to the first 4 episodes, go back and do that first. We'll be here when you get back. As always, we want to thank our new patrons. But since we're recording these credits in advance, here's Ian from the future to tell you all about them.
Hey everyone, Ian from the future here. We'd like to thank Adeline, Tori Smith, Charles, Gabriel, Frequent J, Howard Vasconi, Damon H, Hamster, Sarah Berry, Wendy Gagne, Sarah Higdon, Kay Hennessy. Thank you guys so much for your support and welcome to the Pod Fam. And if you want to hear your name immortalized in audio, or you'd like access to other perks like ad-free episodes, exclusive merch, or over 4 years of Patreon exclusive stories, then you should check us out on Patreon too. Just click the link in the show notes below to learn more. And anyway, I think that's it. This is the last episode of the fall series. We're so excited to bring it to you. Now back to Brooke from the past.
Just a reminder that we do content warnings at the bottom of our show notes. So you can check that by scrolling all the way to the bottom of the notes. If you don't think you're in the right headspace for this series, please take care and pass it by for now. You can always come back later.
This is part 5 of The Secret Game, written by Ian Epperson, narrated by Brooke Jeanette. Kaylee is Shelby Novak. Abby is Kayla Timshiv. Mrs. Lander is Emma Shrijarko. Jess is Carly Coulihan. And Emma is Abigail Blythe. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show.
That night at Mom's house, we stayed up way too late. It began with us making a plan for the next day, for how we would play the mirror game and hopefully get rid of whatever was happening to us. But it was more than that. Each time we'd gotten together, the conversation eventually turns to Emma. At the restaurant, we shared memories and had our own little morning session. But it felt different here, in my mom's living room. The place didn't look all that different than it had when we were middle schoolers. Sure, the aesthetic had been upgraded, but the bones were all the same. In this setting, we felt her absence in a new way. The next morning, I woke up first. None of us had had the courage to go off to one of the bedrooms. No one wanted to be alone. As the light started coming in through the windows, I could make out the scene. Kaylee on one couch, Jess on another. Abby was curled up in Mom's recliner. Me in a nest of blankets and pillows on the floor. It could almost be 1999 again. We could almost be our old selves, back in our small, small world. It made me smile as I took it all in. And then I remembered what we were missing. Last night, when the conversation turned toward Emma, we weren't talking about her in relation to the mirror game. It wasn't about how to solve our problem. She probably didn't know any more than we did. We didn't want her here because we needed her. We just wanted our friend back. I did my best to keep my breathing under control, and I stayed silent as I let a couple of tears fall down my face. Somehow, it was just setting in for the first time. She was really gone. It was Saturday, the day of the funeral. The funeral was going to be at 1 in the afternoon. We'd all sent each other photos of our outfits last night. We'd also all run panicking from our houses and apartments and hotel rooms. So, naturally, no one had packed up. Jess and I weren't going to drive back to our respective cities. And even if we did want to, we weren't ready to go home yet, to be alone, even in the light of day. So instead of going home, we went shopping, and I actually ended up finding an outfit I liked better than the one I'd planned. Abby and Kaylee left together to get ready. They went to the hotel first, and then to Abby's. That way, neither of them had to be alone while picking up their funeral clothes and anything else they needed. I was kind of surprised they were willing to ride in the same car. Maybe they just had bigger things to worry about now. While we were out shopping for outfits, we also picked up a few other things that we would need for our plan to do the mirror game that night. At noon, we were all back at Mom's house, the four of us. We were all dressed in our church clothes, but none of us were ready to say goodbye to our friend. The service was at our old church, the one where we'd all grown up together, and where Emma's mom still attended. We arrived a few minutes early. It was a surreal feeling, walking back in there. None of us were still believers, and I hadn't been to church since high school. Inside the main doors, by the big sanctuary, there were those two bathrooms where we played the mirror game so many years ago. The last time we all did it together. I turned to look into the big sanctuary doors, and a face stuck out at me. It was Miss Lander. She was much older. Of course she was. She was in her 40s the night she caught us playing the game. She must be almost 60 now. She saw us come in, and something changed in her expression. A look of recognition, and then a sharp inhale. It looked like she might cry. I worried because Jess had talked about whatever it is in the mirrors, pretending to be Miss Lander. It had been stalking her with this face. Not exactly this one, the one we used to know when we were kids. But Jess didn't seem to react. She started to approach us.
Oh my goodness, girls. How long has it been?
She looked us up and down and came in for a hug from all four of us.
What a horrible thing, isn't it? How are you all holding up?
We said we were holding up as well as could be expected.
I have to tell you, I still ask your parents about you every time I see them. They keep me up to date, and I am just so, so proud of all of you.
As we broke away from her, I could see a little bit of a quiver in Jess's lip. I know that she knew it wasn't real. All those times she'd seen Miss Lander in mirrors or in the glass. But seeing the real person, it takes a little bit of the fear away. But also, I think maybe you never really outgrow that desire for approval from the people that were in your life when you were a kid. We went into the sanctuary, and there was a line to approach the front. Emma's mom and her stepdad stood there. They were beside a closed casket. I had wondered whether we'd be able to see her, but maybe this was for the best. None of us were still completely sure what had happened, but we all suspected by now that she'd done it to herself. As we approached, we could see all the photos displayed. Photos from every age and every phase of her life. Baby pictures, walking for the first time. A big smile with missing teeth. Her first day of school. And then there was a whole collection. Photos of all of us. Beginning summer in elementary school and going up to the eighth grade. The first group of people outside her family, where she knew she really belonged. At least, I hoped she knew. There were photos from high school and college, on into adulthood. There were people we didn't recognize in some of them. Photos from her travels, pictures of Emma with city skylines in the background, selfies overlooking a long drop and a vast forest. When we came to the front of the line, Emma's mom greeted us and introduced us to her new husband. Emma's dad had passed away years ago. Before we went to our seats, Emma's mom asked Abby if we were still planning to come to the wake afterward. She told her that we were. The service began, and it played out like most funerals do. There's a rhythm to these things, and it makes sense, but it never really sums up a person's life. Not well, anyway. You have to try, but you can never really do it. I listened to the anecdotes and the stories, the things that her mom and family wanted us to remember about Emma, but I just felt empty. I guess you can't really come back around at the end and get a feel for something as big as a life. You just had to be there. After the service, Emma's mom came over to us, and once again, she extended the invitation to the wake. She asked if we remembered how to get there. It was still the house she'd lived in when we were growing up. We told her that, of course we did. Before we left the church, I went to the bathroom in the big lobby. It felt so different than it had been that night, all those years ago. The whole church did. I looked into the mirror, the same one I'd looked into that night that we got caught, when I didn't see anything, but pretended that I did. I couldn't deny what had happened last night, what had been happening this whole time. All of us experiencing our own little low-grade hauntings. It was real, but something about the light of day made it feel distant, diminished it. Out in the lobby, it also looked different. They've renovated it, painted it, added on to it. But even so, it also felt smaller. The way it feels to go back and visit a childhood home as an adult, or a school you used to attend. You're bigger, but it's more than that. The place just doesn't have that larger-than-life significance that it used to. It was a strange feeling pulling up to Emma's house. Inside, there were cousins, other family members, aunts and uncles. It didn't occur to me that we wouldn't know anyone else there, just her mom. I felt out of place, and I wondered if we really should have come. But she greeted us warmly and introduced us to everyone. She looked around and blew out a deep breath.
"Let me show you around," she said. "So much has changed since you all were here."
Most everyone was in the kitchen and the living room. She walked us down the stairs to the basement, where we used to have our sleepovers. Back then, it had functioned as a kind of second living room. There were couches and a big TV, where we used to watch movies and talk late into the night. But now, it was storage. There were boxes and totes lining the walls. The old couches were gone, and the ones that used to be upstairs had taken their place, rearranged after they got new furniture for the main living room. It was bright. The decor from the walls was gone. It felt sterile and musty. Emma's mom told us that it's getting harder for her to come and go as she gets older, so they don't really use it anymore. But she still loves to remember the nights we stayed over. She wanted us to see the place for what we all assumed would be the last time. Before we went upstairs, I peeked over to a door in the corner. It was cracked. Inside, it was dark, but I could just barely make out the mirror on the bathroom wall. After the basement, she took us up a second flight of stairs to the bedrooms. She took us right up to the door of Emma's old room and let out a deep, resigned sigh.
"Here it is," she said.
She pushed the door open, and unlike the rest of the house, it was like walking back in time. Emma's room was a little different than I remembered. After all, we'd all fallen out a few years before we'd all moved out. A few things had changed, but her bed was still where it used to be. The same posters were still on the walls, and lining the walls were her two big bookshelves, absolutely full to the brim with old paperbacks. The books were different. By the time she moved out, it looked like Emma was mostly into YA, sci-fi, and a few of the classics. Her mom had always been close with her, and it seemed like she never really got used to Emma being out of the house. She'd changed everything about the house, but she'd never had the heart to change Emma's room.
"I want to show you something,"
she said, gesturing toward a little desk and a vanity on the far wall. We followed her. Resting on the wall was a vanity mirror, and tucked into the frame, sticking out into the glass, there were photos of us from back then. Polaroids and prints from our disposable cameras. Our tiny, younger selves. A look back at a time that doesn't exist anymore. Kaylee gave me a little bump on the arm and took my attention away from the photos on the mirror. She tilted her head toward one of the bookshelves. A row of small paperbacks. Kids' books. The only children's books that were still on the shelves. I leaned over to read the name on the spine. And there it was. Ella and the Secret Game. There were several of them. It had been a series. Kaylee gave me a look. One that said, "Should I?" I froze and peeked back over to Emma's mom. She was talking to Jess and Abby by the mirror. Kaylee didn't wait for a response. She snatched two of the books from the shelf and stuffed them into her bag. I looked over again to see if Emma's mom had noticed. She was still talking to Abby and Jess, oblivious to me and Kaylee. But there was something else. From my angle, I could see her in the mirror. And that's when I noticed that her reflection didn't match her movement in real life. Even as she faced toward the other girls, pointing and admiring the old photos on the mirror's frame, in the reflection, she turned her head to face us. Her expression was a sinister grin. It wanted us to know that it was watching. I looked at Kaylee and she was staring. She saw it too. I thought I might throw up. Just then, Kaylee spoke up.
"Hey guys, I'm so sorry. I'm not feeling so well."
Emma's mom turned around to face us, but in the mirror, nothing changed. The reflection didn't move. In the car, we told Abby and Jess what we'd seen. We were so worked up that we got all the way back to my mom's house before Kaylee remembered to tell Abby and Jess what she'd found. The Ella and the Secret Game series.
"I don't know. I probably shouldn't have taken them, but I just thought they might be helpful."
She dug them out of her bag and dropped them on the coffee table. It was 4 in the afternoon, We had a few hours before it was dark. Everyone kind of settled into their spots around the living room. Kaylee went to the kitchen and looked for snacks. Abby was restless. She scrolled on her phone, then got up and paced the hallway, then scrolled on her phone some more. Everyone was anxious, but there was nothing to do with that energy. Jess and I had picked up a bottle of wine while we were out shopping that morning. Now was as good a time as any to open it. With a wine glass in hand, Jess picked up the first book of the series, curled up on one end of the couch, and started reading. Each of the two books were about 100 pages, medium-ish print, lots of chapter breaks. She finished the first one in about an hour, then she picked up the second one. Everyone was still doing their own things when Jess closed the second book and sat it on the coffee table. Abby noticed her putting it down.
So, anything useful?
Everyone looked at Jess for answers. She didn't say anything for a moment. Then, she spoke.
It's a lot like it said online. Ella's about to start middle school, and she's anxious about a new school and new people. Her grandmother teaches her the mirror game. Then she teaches her friends how to play it together. Just like we used to do it. They can ask questions and see the future. And somehow, it ends up that Ella can still see her friends in the mirror, but only when they're in trouble. I don't know. There's one thing that stuck out at me. Ella's grandmother told her to never play the game alone.
It was getting dark, and a heavier mood was taking shape in the house. It was time to start putting together our plan for the game. Last night, when we all met here, we plotted it out. Abby had gone back through the group thread and made notes about all the different ways you could repel a spirit or break a curse. We didn't know which one would work, so we would do them all. As much as possible, anyway. Salt circles, protective sigils, and, of course, the most common suggestion that we found. If you did a ritual wrong and something happened, counteract it by doing the ritual correctly. We were going to play the mirror game again. First, we covered all the mirrors in the house with blankets or towels and closed the blinds and curtains. If this thing was coming through mirrors and glass, we didn't want it to be able to watch us prepare. I threw a blanket on the big mirror over the mantel when I remembered something. That first day, when we found out about Emma, I came to visit Mom and I drove around town, eventually ending up here. It was before I'd even thought about the mirror game again. The house was dusty, and maybe it was just a coincidence, but there had been marks in the dust on the top of the mantle, in front of the mirror. Whatever it is that's doing this, can it get out? Once we'd covered all the glass, we moved all the furniture from the living room. Then we went out to Abby's car and brought in several big bags of rock salt, the kind for melting ice on sidewalks. We threw the bags down on the carpet with a grunt and a thud. Kaylee and Jess carried a cheap rug into the living room and they laid it out onto the floor. We flipped it over so it was bottom side up, a blank beige surface. Abby got a can of spray paint and drew a big pentagram across the entire thing. Something we'd have never believed when we were youth group kids, but that Abby learned in her goth phase. Pentagrams aren't a sinister symbol. They're symbols of protection. While she was busy doing that, I drew, as best I could, some of the ancient protection sigils on poster board that we hung up around the room. Jess and Kaylee were pouring rock salt in a big circle around the rug, then making a trail along the baseboards on both sides of the hallway. It was a path outlined in salt, a safety circle, all the way back to the bathroom sink at the end of the hall, to the mirror we would use to play the game. It was an all-of-the-above kind of plan. None of us really knew what any of this meant or what it was really supposed to do. We just hoped that something would work. The game would start at midnight. If we were late, it wouldn't work. At 11:30, we double-checked everything. We made sure that the salt circle and trail to the bathroom mirror were unbroken. We double-checked that we hadn't put any sigils upside down or backwards. At 11:45, we gathered on the pentagram Abby had spray-painted on the rug, and we took in the room.
Do you think Miss Lander would still be proud of us? Jesus.
Oh my God.
At 11:50, I dug a lighter out of Mom's junk drawer. At 11:55, we were all inside the pentagram on the rug. I looked around. Maybe it's because I'd never seen this room without furniture in it. Maybe it was the intensity of the moment, the anticipation, or the adrenaline pushing through my veins. But the room felt off. At 11:56, Abby recited the rules.
We have to hold hands to show our love and unity. We tell a secret that we've never told anyone. This is to make ourselves vulnerable. We go one at a time into the room and shut the door. We can only have the light of a single flame. We have to look into the mirror and ask our question. And then we see whatever we see.
At 11:57, it felt real for the first time. Whatever it was that was haunting us, the thing we've been avoiding, we were about to invite it back. At 11:58, Kaylee reminded us of our question. We all had to ask it exactly the same way. At 11:59, we all watched the clock. Midnight. The four of us exchanged looks.
Are we ready?
Everyone nodded. We planned it down to what order we'd tell our secret in. The blocking out of the glass and the mirrors had made the room feel darker. It also absorbed sound. It made me feel small. Abby looked at Kaylee. No one was surprised by what she had to say.
I hated you for so long, and I want to be over it, and I want to just move on, but I don't know if I can. Because when we're all hanging out, and it's all fun, and it's all great, I forget. But as soon as I go home, I feel it again. And it's been great reconnecting with everyone. But I don't know if I can ever trust you again.
Kaylee gave Abby a look that was a mix of hurt and indifference.
We were 16. It's old enough to know better.
It was Kaylee's turn next. In that moment before she spoke, I realized I should have been thinking of my secret. I was next in line, and the only thing I could think of was something I knew I couldn't say. Not now.
I knew what I was doing when I got caught with Tyler. I knew he was your first crush, and I did it anyway. I wish I hadn't done it. I wish I could change it, but I can't. I've changed so much, and I'm not that person anymore, and I almost didn't come back because I knew that I would feel like that girl again as soon as I saw you.
Abby watched her, but she still had a hardened expression. I guess it was inevitable that this was the way the game would go. It was my turn. My mind was blank. I couldn't focus. I couldn't just make something up. Not when it was this important. The others were all looking at me. I took a deep breath and turned to Kaylee.
I'm the reason that you got caught with Tyler.
Everyone's face changed. No one had expected this. I'd hit it well.
I didn't think, you know? I just did it. I didn't think ahead to what it would do to the group. I was just so furious when I found out. So, yeah, it was me.
There was a rage building behind Kaylee's eyes. Her face was turning red.
Do you have any idea what they did to me at that school? The things they told me every day. The looks I got from the other girls and Jesus, from the boys?
I know.
You don't. Fuck this. I'm done here.
Kaylee stepped out of her spot and started toward the door. Everyone jumped into action, saying no, that she couldn't leave now. I didn't dare move. I didn't want to draw attention to myself. As the others were trying to convince Kaylee to stay, something happened. Something that would have been nothing if it were any other time. One of the blankets fell off a window. Everyone stopped and looked. Abby looked down at the pentagram and the salt circle.
Should we go put it back up?
I don't think so. The game has already started.
I looked at Kaylee.
I know you don't want to listen to me right now, but we have to finish the game. We have to do the ritual the right way if we want to reverse whatever this is.
Kaylee glared, but she went back to her place in the circle. Everyone turned to Jess. She was the last to tell her secret.
I stopped liking all of you a long time before we stopped being friends.
The tension in the room was unbearable. Jess had a look that might as well have said that if we were about to die over some high school drama, she was going to kill us herself. Everything that had been under the surface this whole week was finally out in the open. It was time for the next step in the game. We would take our turns in front of the mirror in the same order that we'd told our secrets. Abby was first. She stepped out of the pentagram and walked between the rows of salt to the bathroom at the end of the hall. From down the hall, I heard a whoosh from Abby pulling the blanket off the medicine cabinet mirror. We'd decided to leave it covered until the last minute, just in case. The door squeaked closed. The house was so silent, we could hear the flick of the lighter. And then, Abby's muffled voice through the door. Kaylee turned to me.
I'm sorry, I know that was a lot, but I don't think you realize what it was like for me after they put me in that school.
I'm so sorry.
I'll get over it, but I'm still livid.
It was quiet again, until we heard the door open and Abby pacing quickly back toward the circle. It reminded me of the feeling of running up the basement stairs after turning off the light.
Watch what you're doing. Don't kick the salt.
Abby glared back at her as if to say, I'm not an idiot. Next, it was Kaylee's turn. Abby barely looked at her as she handed off the lighter. Kaylee went in the same way Abby had. The door shut. A few moments later, she came back out. I watched them both, trying to gauge if they'd seen anything, and if so, what it was. I wasn't sure I was ready to know the answer to our question. It was my turn. I walked down the hall, a hallway that should be the most familiar place in the world to me, but it felt so foreign. At the end of the hall, there was still light filtering back from the living room, but not much. I kept my head down, avoiding the mirror until I absolutely had to. My hand was shaking as I took the knob and pushed the door closed. It shut with a click. I raised my eyes to where the mirror would be, but it was pitch black, and I couldn't see it. Then, I asked my question.
What happened to Emma?
I looked into the mirror, and all I saw was myself staring back. It was just like it had been when we were kids. There was nothing there. I walked back to the living room. As I did, Kaylee and Abby glanced at me. I gave them both a little shake of the head. They shook their heads too. None of us had seen anything. Jess went after me, and when she came back out, we could tell that she hadn't seen anything either.
So, nobody saw anything? Did it work? Does that mean it worked or that it didn't work?
I don't know.
If it didn't work, what do we do next? Do we have to do this all over again? Do we have to do it back at Emma's basement or at the church? And we don't have.
While Abby was talking, I noticed movement from the corner of my eye. Up on the mantle, the blanket that we'd put over the big mirror. It was slipping. Slowly at first. And then I saw something else. The curtains were rippling. And then they started to come apart on their own. At the same time, I could feel air moving, maybe coming up from the vents. It smelled like burning tires.
What is that?
It picked up until my hair was fluttering in the breeze. The heat or the air conditioning shouldn't be pushing this hard. All at once, every covering that we'd put over every pane of glass fell to the floor. The curtains peeled open, and we were completely exposed. The wind picked up, but I didn't know where it was coming from. I realized it was coming from the mirror over the mantle. It grew stronger. Our hair was billowing. The mirror was no longer showing a reflection. It was an image of a great room. I recognized it as the church, but not the church where we'd been earlier that day. It was the church from 15 years ago. The pews, the paint, the carpet, the long aisle down toward the front. It was like we were standing just outside the sanctuary doors.
Are you seeing this?
We were. On the stage, down in the front, there was a casket. That was from today. It was Emma's casket. We watched in horror as the lid was pushed open from the inside, an arm holding it open. And then, what we all knew was coming next. Emma sat up.
We need to go!
No! Don't leave the circle!
Emma climbed out of the casket and tilted her head. She lifted her hand and made a little wave. It was horrific. She was soaking wet. Her wrists were cut. It occurred to me then that we were getting the answer to our question. The mirror was showing us what happened to Emma. Jess shouted again.
Fuck the circle! We need to go!
I looked at the door, and I was horrified to see that Emma was there too. A horrible, sinister-looking Emma. Not the person we knew. She was standing in the way, giving that same awful grin. Water streaming out of her clothes and onto the floor.
What do we do? I don't know what to do!
Looking back to the mirror that was over the mantel, Emma was coming up the aisle now. I could see her in the dark reflections from the windows. She was in the mirror at the end of the hall, too. She was everywhere. The Emma that was in the room with us stepped right up to the edge of the salt circle and motioned toward it. She made a little scraping gesture toward the salt on the floor, as if to say, "Come on, friends, just let me in." I looked to Jess. She was the one who was always put together. Jess was the one with the answers. But she was frozen, her hair blowing behind her, her whole body shaking. If Jess was out of ideas, so was I.
Jess, what do we do?
She looked at me and just mouthed a pitiful, "I don't know."
Is this it? Is this how it ends?
Emma in the mirror was right up against the other side of the glass now, her palms pressed against it. We could see her wounds clearly now. I wasn't ready. It couldn't end like this. Not in this house. Not before we had a chance to make everything right. Everyone must have had the same thought at the same time. Abby turned to Kaylee.
I'm so sorry! I really wanted to try! I'm so sorry I hurt you, Abby! I'm so sorry, Kaylee! I'm so sorry! I wish we had more time!
Emma's hand came through the glass. Everyone screamed.
Stay inside the circle!
The other Emma was still standing at the edge of the salt line, making her little gesture. The salt was starting to shift, a pebble of it here and there, flying off in the wind. One of the protective sigils we'd drawn flew off the wall. We didn't have much time.
Why does it have to be her? I want to remember the real Emma!
We all scooched in together toward the middle of the circle, as far from the edge as possible. More salt started to blow away. This was really the end. But then, I saw something change in Kaylee's expression. Something snapped in her. Kaylee reached down and picked up a candle, one of those heavy ones in a glass jar.
Show us your real face, goddammit! You can't have hers! You can't make us afraid of her!
In one big motion, she wound up and hurled it at the thing's face. And all at once, every piece of glass in the house shattered. We didn't have a good answer for what had happened. When the fire and police and EMTs arrived, they found four women, scratched and scraped, but otherwise okay. Jess had the presence of mind to flip the rug over so that the pentagram wasn't facing up. The salt was all blown away, and the sigils were ripped apart in the blast. They just blended in with the rest of the damage. I'm not sure how, but they could tell it wasn't a gas leak. Eventually, they would come to the conclusion that it was some kind of microburst of wind, or a sudden pressurization event. Something had tried to come out of a mirror, and Kaylee had smashed that mirror while it was in between worlds. Does that destroy a spirit? By the time we answered all their questions and they let us leave, it was almost sunrise. We'd been up all night again, and Abby invited us all over to get some sleep. We took her up on it. The cemetery was on the way to Abby's house. It hadn't even been a full day, but it felt like a lifetime. I watched the gravestones from the window, and I thought again about Emma's funeral, how the photos and anecdotes just seemed so underwhelming. None of us really knew that much about the person she'd become later on, after we went our separate ways. Only what we'd seen on social media. And just like her funeral, knowing someone through a social media feed isn't real either. A series of photos and a few lists of her favorite things don't make up a life. Even though we didn't really know her as an adult, it's easy to see how some things stayed the same. She'd always been the first in the group to check in when something was wrong. We'd always thought she was so intuitive. She could just tell when you were having a hard time. Even later on in adulthood, in some of our toughest moments, we'd see that little notification, a message from her, on our phones, in our apps. Maybe it was just her hyper-awareness of the group dynamics. The way she was always afraid we were just letting her tag along. That she wasn't really a part of the group. Always thinking about her place in it. It probably meant that Emma was the first to sense that we were growing apart back then. And I wonder if, in that anxiety, she did something that could only have made sense in a 12-year-old's mind. I wonder if that's why she taught us the game. Ella and the Secret Game was the only kids' book she held on to. It meant something to her. Why would she hold on to that one? Did she teach us the game on a whim? A long shot that it would keep us together? And did it work? Had we been the only group of friends to try it? And could there be others? Or had Emma done something darker? We grew up believing that witchcraft and the devil were real, and that they could give you something for a price. Maybe she was able to see us through mirrors, just like in the book. Maybe there was a deal struck between a 12-year-old girl and something ancient, something she couldn't understand. Is that how she always knew when we needed her? And maybe that's why it only got worse after she was gone. I don't know the mechanics of it or how we made it go away, but I can't shake the feeling that she was holding it back all these years, somehow keeping it trapped inside her mirror and ours. Maybe there's an explanation that isn't quite so dark. As far as I knew, Emma never made a lot of new friends in high school after we all split up. She had a fresh start in college, but she was still Emma, and Emma had trouble opening up to people. We all grew up in a church that had a strange notion of love. Back then, we thought that love meant that we spent all of our time together, that we were obsessed with each other and our friendship. We thought that love had to look that way. And despite all of our best efforts, we carry that strange love with us. It sounds so silly. We were just kids. And just about everyone grows out of their middle school friendships. But we shared something so special back then. Until we tore it apart. But as I get older, I think love is about choosing your people and then sticking with them, even when they do hurt you. Choosing to believe in them, even when they aren't their best selves. Mom's illness took a hard turn shortly after Emma was gone. After she passed, the house stood boarded up and empty. Ever since that night, we played the mirror game for the last time. I briefly thought about trying to put it back together, about moving back in. Maybe that would be a way of holding on to my mom a little bit longer. We're never really ready to let go, even when we see it coming. But after everything that happened there, I just couldn't move back in. Places change, even when they stay the same. Besides, I liked the city, and I couldn't see myself back in my hometown, no matter how hard I tried to picture it. Home is as much a time as it is a place. And my hometown, it just doesn't feel like it used to. When a place doesn't feel like home anymore, its time has passed, and it'll never be home again. The four of us, Abby, Kaylee, Jess, and me, we still have the group chat, and we talk almost every day. We don't talk about that week anymore. We talk about the present, the now. Just before Kaylee hurled that candle into the glass, when we screamed our apologies to each other, we made a choice that night. We chose each other. To love each other, even when we aren't our best selves. And we chose to move forward together. When she was ready, Emma's mom had Abby come by. And together, they guessed her passwords, and they made all of Emma's profiles into memorials. On her birthday, every year, we post photos of the five of us together. From a time that's long gone. From a place that used to be home. Back when our worlds were small. And for a moment, we can feel like we're there again. Like a memory that comes to you in a dream. Like reflections from across the water. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This was The Secret Game, Part 5, written by Ian Epperson, narrated by Brooke Jeanette. Kaylee is Shelby Novak. Abby is Kayla Temshev. Miss Lander is Emma Sherjarko. Jess is Carly Coulihan. And Emma is Abigail Blythe. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Music by Kayla Britchie. Since we're getting so many new patrons right now, we'll be back to update our producer-level patrons on the November episode. But as always, thank you all so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram under Pod13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. And you can find that in the show notes too.
I'm Bridget Freeman, and I treasure the time we've spent together. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.
It's simple math. Tim Horton's 2-3-4 menu fills your mornings without emptying your pockets. $2 gets you a hot coffee or a classic bagel. $3, try a sausage and cheese English muffin or 2 classic donuts. And for $4, enjoy an egg and cheese croissant or an iced cap. Do the math. It all adds up to delicious deals. Only at Tim's. The Tim's 2-3-4 menu is available until 2 p.m. at select Columbus, Ohio restaurants. Terms apply.